You're listening to Cattails.
Hi, and welcome to Cattails. The Kinks are recognised as one of the most important and influential British groups of all time, with millions of record sales and countless awards and accolades to their name. In this edition, I catch up with keyboard player Ian Gibbons, who, as well as being a long-term member of the Kinks, also has a long list of credits to his name, including Love Affair, Dr. Feelgood, Roger Chapman, The Sweet, Susie Quattro, Ian Hunter and Chip Hawkes. This is The One with Ian Gibbons. Hello, Ian. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. A bit achy. We've been chopping a tree down in the garden.
Oh, crikey, have you? That sounds a bit ambitious, if you ask me. Was it a big tree?
It's not completely chopped down. We've trimmed it back because it's a willow and it was getting a bit out of hand.
Oh, they can really sap water, they can, can't they? You've got to be careful.
They certainly can.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Have you got water at the end of the garden then, or is it just under the house now?
Well, yeah, it's under the house, I think. Yeah, probably.
Oh, God. Darted off as a little sapling. A couple of years later, it's sort of decaying everything around you.
It did actually start. This is a strange conversation, isn't it, really?
But
it started as a bit of twisted willow in a bouquet of flowers that we received.
No, it never did.
And it started sprouting while it was in the flower thing, vase. And we thought, we'll just stick that in the garden. And off it went.
Did it really?
25 foot it got to.
So that... Oh, God. Do you know, you just never believe it. Funny thing was, I actually picked up a conker once.
Right.
And I planted it in the garden. And I say once, I actually had three of these things, planted them all thinking nothing would grow. I've now got three horse chestnut trees.
Oh, there you go, you see.
Isn't that incredible? Nature finds a way, Ian. This is it, isn't it? It finds a way.
It certainly does.
Oh, dear. Anyway, we could talk about gardening all day, couldn't we, really? But that's not really what we're here to talk about.
Not really, no.
Like to have a chat with you, really, about your career in general and everything you're up to, because looking through your history here, Ian, there's quite a lot of stories to tell, I believe.
Well, certainly, yeah. Basically going way, way back to when I was a small chap. Mm. I had a lot of interest in music. My head was in the radiogram all through the 50s when I wasn't out sort of playing like you do when you're a young kid then. Mm. So my parents bought me a little plastic guitar for Christmas and I was able to pick out lines on it. I was probably about 7 or 8 at this time. And they realised I had an interest in music, so we didn't have really enough room for a proper piano in the house because they were all the big old things in those days. And so they started me on accordion lessons, believe it or not. And that's what I did my sort of grades on. And I did that for about 4 or 5 years, and I did all sorts of things with that, really, with the school orchestra and coach trips with old age pensioners and charity events and all that sort of things. And, of course, by then, I was up into secondary school, and I sort of thought, well, this isn't really all that cool these days, you know, playing an accordion. But it has since raised its head several times, especially with Ray Davis. He likes the accordion, so I've used it on stage with him and recording as well. But So I saved up some pocket money and money that I'd earned from doing, you know, bits and bobs, and bought myself a Watkins Rapier guitar, which is a cheap copy of a Stratocaster, and a little amplifier, and myself and a couple of friends from school formed a band, like a trio, and we just sort of played around youth clubs and things at school and stuff. They were quite open to it. Obviously with our dads helping us with the gear, dropping it off. And then when I eventually left school, I went to work in a music shop. And although that wasn't my first a career opportunity, they actually wanted me to go on a piano tuning course. But which was like 7 years long, apparently.
Is that right?
But I never made it out of the shop because they thought I was a really good salesman. Well,
lovely.
Of course, I realised then that everybody that was coming into the shop was a guitar player. And everybody by then, because of people like Spencer Davis Band and Georgie Fame and all those sort of people, were using keyboards. So I bought what I could afford, which is a Vox Continental organ and a AC30 amp, which I wish I still had. But joined a band. We were running our own little gigs around the Benfleet South End area, which is where I'm from. And it just went on from there. Then I joined up with these are people I met through in the music shop, Graham Douglas, who later went on to form the Eddie and the Hot Rods.
Oh yes.
And we had a heavy rock band called Pig Iron doing Hendrix and stuff like that, Vanilla Fudge.
And this was you playing keyboards then, was it, Ian? Or were you on the guitar at that point?
I was on keyboards by then. I'd bought this Vox organ, and some of the places had a Hammond in that we could use, so which was great. And that's what I ultimately wanted. Mm. Obviously, it was ridiculously expensive at the time, but I managed to save up enough money for a deposit and got one eventually. But obviously, you've got to pay for it. So I ended up... in the sort of late 60s, early 70s, there was and continuing on from that, there were a lot of venues with bands in doing like residencies, mainly run by Mecca. Most of these venues are bingo halls now, I think.
They are, aren't they? Yes.
Yeah, yeah. They seem to be. And you'd do sort of 4-45 minutes of sets a night, 4 or 5 nights a week, and get paid grown-up money because it was all linked to the musicians' union, you know.
Yes, in those days. It was really good, wasn't it? Because they did look after your interests, didn't they, far more?
And plus you have to learn every week everything that's in the charts, you know, anything that new comes in, and you have to, you know, you have to fill, you know, 3.5 hours up with material, approximately, every night. And you'd alternate with a DJ or... later on, we ended up in the Empire Leicester Square, which is a big ballroom underneath the cinema there. And there was a big band on with that, which is typical of the big London ballrooms, on a rotating stage. So you'd do your 45, they would turn the stage, and there'd be a big band on the other side.
Got you, right. Crikey.
Yeah.
What a great grounding, though, that must have been for you, Ian. I mean, that's quite a grueling set, by the sound of it, all that time each night.
Oh, yeah.
That's quite a lot of input that you're putting there, isn't it? But what a fabulous sort of grounding for you to learn your craft.
Well, it is, because, you know, obviously you've got your favourite sort of kinds of music that you really like to play, but when you've got to, you know, earn a living and pay for your equipment and rent and whatever, you have to do everything, you know, really, that gets thrown at you. So... much to my chagrin at the time, there was a Wednesday night opening thing at the Empire Leicester Square where they used to have only ballroom dancing for the first 2 hours. So you'd have to do like a 45-minute spot of ballroom dancing stuff, strict tempo, which was nobody in the band I was in forte at all, but we'd sort of bluffed our way around it and just... played the same sort of 15 songs every time.
How wonderful.
Well, it was so funny because everybody used to turn up in you know, they just needed the numbers on the back. They had their full evening dress and the women with the big skirts and everything, you know. Sort of going round and round the dance floor. It was hilarious, really. But
the original Strictly Come Dancing, isn't it?
Well, it kind of was, yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful. Am I right in saying that actually you also played with Billy Fury?
Well, this is strange because one of my after-school bands was called Apricot Brandy, and we did, you know, the local club things and all that, and we had a van and everything to cart us all around. And we got an audition to work with Billy Fury from Hal Carter, who was Billy's manager at the time, but we weren't really that good enough at the time. But he did send us all the way to Aberdeen to do a gig, which went horribly wrong.
Oh dear.
It wasn't until later on in my career, in the sort of early 70s, that I actually worked with Billy then, which was rather strange, really, sort of coming full circle like that.
It does often do that, though, doesn't it, really, where you see people on the circuit and then you come back again?
Yeah, Oh, yeah, you do. Well, you're forever, you know, bumping into people that you've met before, and, you know, you get to know different groups of musicians doing different stuff, and you know, it's all these people sort of steer the course of your career during your life, you know.
Yeah, of course they do, don't they? But then, of course, I suppose what your name is most linked with throughout your career has got to be the Kinks, hasn't it?
Well, yeah. It's funny because obviously you've interviewed Bob Hendry.
I have.
And he was in Argent, which is when I first met him, because I was in a band of in the early 70s called Life, and we had Chris White as the producer, who was also the bass player from the Zombies.
Yes.
And he was also Argent's producer, and we signed a deal, and we opened up for loads of people, and I met obviously Bob and Jim and Rod and Russ then, and we opened up for loads of people like Susie Quattro, Mud Sweet, and Leo Sayer, Cockney Rebel, as well as Argent.
Wonderful.
And we had an album out, but unfortunately it didn't go anywhere. Mm. So later on, in 1979, I'd kept in contact with Jim mainly, and he phoned me up and said, would I like to do an audition for the Kinks? So I thought, well, why not?
Absolutely, why not indeed? Crikey, what an opportunity that must have been. A massive, massive name at the time especially.
Yeah, well, obviously after this band album failed, I started just doing bits and bobs really, with, strangely, I know you've spoken to Mike Steed about Love Affair.
Yes.
And he started doing it in the 90s. Well, I was doing it in the 70s.
Oh, wow. That's excellent.
And I also did Love Affair, the Nashville Teens, but that was when I worked with Billy Fury for a short while. And after that, I did another short residency in a pub in the East End. Mm-hmm. And then I had another band called English Assassin, which released, they didn't release an album, but we recorded one. But unfortunately, it just fell apart at the end. And that's when Jim phoned me up, fortunately, mm-hmm. and asked me if I'd do this audition. And very quickly, I was out on tour in America with them, which was unbelievable, really, because up until then, I'd been, any of the big gigs I'd done were with, you know, support acts, really.
Yes, yes.
And you're on for half an hour, quickly set your gear up, play for half an hour, get all your gear off.
And that was it done. But then, being the headline act, it's completely different, isn't it?
You've got to
carry the whole show now, haven't you? Responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. And because it was a real eye opener, you know, because from the early to late 70s when I joined, the Kinks hadn't really been, you know, much exposure of them over here, apart from all the sort of like the 60s and early 70s hits, up until sort of Lola and Ape Man, and after that it all went very quiet.
Yeah.
And what they'd been doing is building up an audience in America, because right at the beginning of their career, when they first went over there with the UK invasion, they got banned.
Oh, right, really?
Yeah, so
what
they
do?
Couldn't. Well, I think there was an altercation with some union people over there.
Oh, no.
And it was all very much stricter than, you couldn't have, you couldn't sort of, you had to kowtow to them, otherwise wouldn't have anything to do with you. And there was an altercation with some union representative, and they got banned. So, unfortunately, they couldn't go back until the early 70s. So they'd been over there building up their audience again.
Right.
Yeah. And strangely, apart from the very early hits, the American audience didn't really know stuff like Waterloo Sunset or Days or a lot of their songs. It was either the early ones or from Lola onwards.
Blimey. That's what you find, though, isn't it? Because they are two very, very different markets, aren't they? And, you know, over here we obviously look to the States and we have a connection, but really they're quite isolated in their approach, aren't they? And in those days, I think particularly, it was like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is with America, it's just absolutely massive. Mm. And, you know, you have to put the legwork in and play everywhere. Not, you know, I mean, a lot of the bands later on, in the 90s particularly, would just do the major cities on the East Coast and the West Coast and not really venture into places like, you know, outside of any of the big cities, you know, and we did everywhere.
Wow.
You know, we pretty much played in every major town right across the whole of America. And that's what they'd been doing prior to me joining, to build up a bigger audience.
Yeah, sure. And so how long have you been with the Kinks for? Because you had a little bit of a stint where you kind of left went quiet, and then you're back there, but obviously the Kinks are no longer performing as the Kinks now, really, are they? But
No. Well, in 89, there was ever such a lot of tension between the brothers. Mm. And we're recording an album, and it was just, it became all too much, because you can take so much of that.
Yeah.
And then it becomes kind of a bit too much to bear, and it was, I just needed a break from it, really, so I took a break.
Yeah, for your sanity, by the sound of it.
Well, it was a bit like that, because they hadn't really been doing any touring. In the late 80s, and it was because Ray was involved in other projects, film and other stuff, and I got back in the studio, and there was obviously a lot of tension between the brothers, and it was very uncomfortable, and I just thought, well, no, I don't really need this.
No.
So I decided to have a little break, really, or to stop working with them for a little. And then in 93, they invited me back. But in between that time, I sort of did quite a few bits and bobs, you know.
It's good that they invited you back, though, Ian. I mean, that's testament to yourself, isn't it, that you've actually invited back to rejoin the band or, you know, continue your playing in the band. I mean, that's a great accolade for yourself, you know, especially with sibling rivalry going on. So you must have done something right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was kind of a lot easier when I went back as well. The atmosphere seemed to be better.
Yeah.
And, you can get sort of drawn into situations like that, but you can't take sides, obviously, because they're brothers. And, you know, it was a difficult working situation sometimes. But, you know, if you can cope with it all the time, then at that particular time I couldn't. So I decided to take a little break from it.
I
didn't realise I was going to get invited back, but at the time. But as it happened, I did.
Yeah, lovely. So during this break, though, you weren't just sitting on your laurels. By the look of your CV here that I have in front of me, you have worked with some great names as well in between all that.
Well, mainly with Roger Chapman.
Yeah.
Who was the lead vocalist in Family. There was another late 60s, early 70s band that I used to go and see quite regularly. And also with Susie Quattro and The Sweet, and George McRae, The Crystals, The Shirelles, and The Exciters, who are all from America, obviously. And I also did Chip Hawks.
Yeah, lovely.
Along with Mike Steed at the time.
Wonderful. Incredible. Some terrific names. And of course Ian Hunter, you've played with as well.
Yeah. Well, that was later. That was after the Kinks had finished, which was after 96. And Ian hadn't been over for a long time, nearly 12 or 15 years, something like that.
Mm.
And decided that he wanted to come over and build it back up a little bit and see what he was like over here.
Yeah.
And he started recording new albums. I think he'd done about two or three by the time I started working with him, that he wanted to promote around the UK and Europe. So he came over and I started working with him, which was great. He's really easy to work with, and he knows what he wants, but, you know, you're allowed a little bit of leeway with, you know, you can put ideas forward. He's not the person to be strict with what was recorded.
Yeah.
Whereas some people are. I mean, the Kinks weren't either. It would just evolve on stage. And same with Roger Chapman. Roger Chapman was lots of improvisation.
Yeah.
But with people like Susie Quattro and The Sweet, it was pretty much stick with, you know, what the records were to make them sound as much yeah. like them as you could, really.
Yeah, which approach do you prefer then? Do you prefer that prescriptive approach or a little bit more sort of the jazz approach, you know?
I like it much more relaxed, you know, whereas you can, you know, play away from what was actually recorded because, yeah. you know, you can pretty much change little bits every night, so it keeps it more interesting, you know.
Yeah. You respond to the audience as well, I guess, don't you? You feed off yeah. them and you see what they like yeah. and then you can mould yeah. it and almost new creation every night, which is quite exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be. I mean, Roger Chapman was really into doing that, you know, taking songs into other areas and expanding on them, you know. So it keeps your chops up.
Yes, I bet it does.
Especially when it's in keys you don't like improvising in.
Yes, that's a good point. The ones you avoid.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, dear, bless you. So what are you doing now then? I understand you're part of the cast-off Kinks, which, not to be confused with the Kinks, but at the same time is almost the Kinks. Tell me about that.
Well, about 23 years ago, the cast-offs Kinks were put together, which at the time was with John Dalton, who was the second bass player,
yeah.
and John Goslin, who was the first touring keyboarder they used from the early 70s onwards. And it was to raise money for charity and to do fan club meetings and things like that. John Dalton had sadly lost one of his children to leukemia,
oh,
and he wanted to raise some money for Great Ormond Street Hospital, the children's hospital. So that's how that started, and we still do that to this day. We still do, raise money for that as well, by doing the fan club meeting and things like that, where the percentage of the money goes to that charity. So And we'd all go along, everybody that had worked with the Kinks, backing vocalists and, the different members that had been in the band over the years, have a little play, you know. And then about 7 years ago, John and the two Johns, John Dalton and Goslin, decided they were not going to do it anymore. I think John Goslin didn't want to carry on with it, and John Dalton had a few minor health issues, but so Jim Rodford and myself and Mick Avery,
yeah.
we thought, right, we can continue with this because, we know all these great songs.
Yeah.
And let's see, if we can get some more shows together and things. So so ever since then, it's been getting more and more and more. In
wow.
fact, the year before, we did 90.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there's a little bit too many, really.
Oh, crikey, that's grueling. So, Ian, do you really want to continue doing that many? That's grueling.
Well, no, that was a bit too much. But no, there's about 60 to 70 now.
Terrific.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, but then when you work it out, they're sort of about 6-7 a month sometimes, and we have a couple of months totally off, you know.
Yeah.
And we all get together and have a really good time on stage, you know, and everybody gets on really well, and it's fun. It's good fun, and it's great to keep playing, really.
Oh, well, it is, isn't it? And I mean, it's in yeah. your blood, isn't it? I mean, if you started at the age of 9, as you say you did
yeah.
with the accordion, I mean, that's just an incredible yeah. journey, isn't it? And you can't really give up music, can you? Even though you might think to yourself, do you know what? I want to slow down a bit, but you can't, can you? It's in your blood.
Not really. No. Well, I mean, now, I know Ian doesn't really do a great deal of gigs, but he's well into his 70s.
Yeah.
And so's Roger Chapman. They're still out playing. Mick Avery and John Dalton are in their 70s. I'm the youngest in the band, 65.
Oh, bless you.
The next one up from me is Dave Clark, who's the guitar player. And he's 70 in January, but everybody just loves playing, you know, and getting out and doing gigs.
Oh, terrific. And why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. I mean, we're all able to play still, so the worst bit about it is the driving, really.
Yes, it is.
Which I believe Bob went into in some detail about, you know, well, it's always, you're always travelling, really.
This is it, isn't it, really? I suppose you are, especially when you're doing that many gigs. It's part and parcel, isn't it, for the course of
yeah.
the road, really.
Well, yeah, of course it is. Yeah, that's good fun, though. You know, we we'll have a good time. And if anybody wants to come along who might be listening, just look up at castoffkinks.co.uk, and there's most of the gigs in there and stuff being added all the time. And you're based in Norwich, aren't you?
I am over in Norwich, yep. I am in Norwich indeed.
Got very fond memories of Norwich from when I was
you?
A child.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Well, my parents had friends who had a bungalow on the Norfolk Broads in Wroxham.
Oh, lovely.
And end of the garden, straight in the water, which I did once, but anyway.
Oh, dear.
So if it was a bit of a wet day, we would go into Norwich and into the market.
Oh.
And then as a family, and then maybe go to the cinema and stuff like that. So,
how lovely.
Yeah, but we used to go out to Haysborough Beach and all that sort of stuff and get a boat out on the Broads for a day or two, whatever. You know, it was really good fun. I had sort of fond memories of it.
It's a lovely part of the world, I have to say. It really is.
Yeah.
You know,
nice
big coastline and everything.
Yeah.
So what's next for you then, Ian? Have you got the Cast Off Kinks? Is there anything else that you haven't done yet that you'd really love to do?
Oh, dear. That's a... Mike and Steve and I, and at some point maybe in the future when we've got a bit of time, we keep talking about doing something, but we're not quite sure what. But I really, you know, I've actually worked with Mike. I've sat in with Marmalade once, and also did a stint with the Blues Brothers band with him. He was helping me out by playing keyboards on it when I was off doing Roger Chapman and stuff. So we've got a lot of connections, and you know, if there's a possibility if we can get something together, that'd be quite good.
That'd
I know he's
good.
Got a little pub band going, but unfortunately, it's fitting that in with the Cast Off Kinks because we sort of work so much at the moment.
You've got a grueling schedule by the sound of it. So
well, it's not grueling. It's quite easy. I mean, it's you know, it's just that we enjoy doing. So
and why not? It sounds wonderful.
Yeah. I do sit in with other bands now and again down in, I've got some friends down in Kent that I go and play with now and again, and it's just sort of covers, it keeps you on your toes, you know.
Takes
when you
back
played.
To those early years, doesn't it, by the sound
of it? Does, yeah.
Came full circle all the way again.
Isn't it strange? Yeah.
It's not an easy business to be in, really, is it?
Well, no, I know, but it sort of brought some amazing, you know, things, you know, sort of travelling the world, seeing loads of places that I probably wouldn't have been able to, like Australia and Japan and weird places like Latvia and Lithuania, Estonia and, you know,
places.
Obviously all of America and Canada and all that business. So it's been fantastic, you know, and you get to stay in some great hotels and right in the middle of the cities and get time off to wander around museums and all sorts of stuff, you know. So it's not just all aeroplanes and transport and gigging and partying. It's a lot else besides.
Oh, how wonderful. I'm jealous now.
Oh,
Ian, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for giving up your time and everything.
That's lovely.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 You've been listening to Cattails. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattails.co.uk.